Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. And welcome to Books and Boba, a new podcast and book club where we read works by Asian and Asian American authors, and then we talk about them. My name is Marvin Yu. I am one of your hosts for this podcast, and I'm joined by my co-host, Rira Yu.
Hi, everyone. And joining us today is geek girl and blogger, Alice Fan Chang.
Hi. I know Rira because we like to read a lot.
Also joining us is former English professor, current writer, and all-around community supporter, Mr. Scott Okamoto.
Hello.
How's it going, Professor?
Awesome. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And welcome to the first episode of Books and Boba, the podcast. This came about because I had started reading a book, the book that we're going to talk about this episode, and Rira just happened to post on Facebook that she was thinking about starting a book club.
Yeah, that kind of started because I was talking to someone at some event and they said, oh, yeah, like there aren't a lot of Asian American authors out there. And I just wanted to hurl my Kindle at them and just be like, what are you talking about? There are so many. And out of anger, I like posted on Facebook being like, I'm forming a book club. Does anybody want to join? And that's when Marvin commented.
I had already been playing around the idea of a book club podcast because in addition to this, I also produce a number of other podcasts, including one I do for work called The Collabcast, where we talk about Asian American issues. And I just always wanted to do a podcast that's more of a book club. Also to force myself to read more. I find that as I got out of school, I stopped reading. I started consuming more YouTube. I do read a lot of internet stuff, though. I don't know if that counts.
No.
No, yeah. Yes. Professor says no.
No, so. It does. It counts.
Well, should we just get into it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should introduce the book that we're going to talk about.
So for this month, what we did was we created a meetup and got people together to talk about our first book, Heroine Complex by Sarah Kuhn.
Yay.
A superhero story starring Asian American characters. It's out now from Daw Books.
Did you want to read the back synopsis?
From the back, Evie Tanaka is the put-upon personal assistant to Evita Jupiter, her childhood best friend and San Francisco's most beloved superheroine. She's great at her job, blending into the background, handling her boss's epic diva tantrums, and getting demon blood out of leather pants. Unfortunately, she's not nearly as together at when it comes to running her own life, standing up for herself, or raising her tempestuous teenage sister, B. But everything changes when Evie's forced to pose as her glamorous boss for one night, and her darkest secrets comes out. She has powers too. Now it's up to her to contend with murderous cupcakes, nosy gossip bloggers, and supernatural karaoke battles, all while juggling unexpected romance and Evita's increasingly outrageous demands. And when a larger threat emerges, Evie must finally take charge and become a superheroine in her own right, or see her city fall to full-on demonic invasion.
So before we get into the discussion, I would like to recommend people to read the book before listening to this podcast episode, just in case you don't want to be spoiled.
Right.
But yeah, if you want to be spoiled anyway, yeah.
So pause now, read the book. Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed the book. We're going to get started with the with the discussion. So Rira,
yes.
Why don't you start us off?
Okay, so yeah, I was interested in reading this book for our first pick, mainly because it had just come out this past summer, and it features two Asian American female superheroes, and I thought that was really, really cool because we don't really see that in TV or media unless they're like silent ninjas or dragon ladies. And yeah, it was just like a breath of fresh air. I don't know, like, shall we get into the characters or?
Yeah, well, I guess we can start out with just general impressions the book. Yeah, like, I thought it was a really, really fun read. Like I mentioned at our meetup before also, it's been a while since I've read a novel. I've listened to a couple audiobooks here and there, but a actual novel, like a fiction novel that wasn't, you know, even on Kindle, I haven't really read a story in a very long time. So it was kind of cool just to, you know, pick it up and just not be able to put it down until I finished it. It's been a while since I've had that feeling. And it was a little nostalgic too, but also a little distressing because, you know, it was 3 a.m. when I finished it and I really needed sleep. But like for me, as someone who grew up with, you know, anime, manga, comic books, and, you know, being a big sci-fi nerd, it was familiar territory. And I think that's why I took to it so easily, but also a really fascinating story. And it was really cool just to have Asian American characters who... Their Asianness was part of their characterization, but not part of the plot.
Yeah.
And I thought that was super, super cool.
That's partly why I wanted to read it, too. It's like a lot of the books about like Asian American identity or the struggle are good and necessary. But a lot of times I don't necessarily myself identify very strongly with those because... You know, I grew up in an area that had a lot of Asian Americans, so I grew up a lot around a lot of Asians. So some of, you know, obviously some of that stuff is still there, but sometimes I'm like, oh, that's not like, I don't feel like that's like the main struggle of my life,
yeah,
kind of thing. And then hearing about Heroine Complex was cool because it's like, I love genre fiction, I love superheroes, and you know, I was like interested in a story where like, you know, it's like about two Asian American friends, like my friends, doing like normal stuff, you know, plus superhero stuff, which is more awesome. But yeah.
Yeah, I think what Marvin was saying is what it's all about. You get into this story and this other world and you can't put it down. And I think if we're lucky, we've all had that experience. You almost don't want the book to end. And there's a little bit of bittersweet feeling at the end when you finish a book that you really enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So having that is, to me, just great. I mean, there's. I'm sure we'll talk about things we liked and things we didn't like. And, you know, no book is perfect, and we could dissect it for days. But at the end of the day, it took you to another place, and you enjoyed being there, and you really liked interacting with these characters. And so that, to me, was why I liked it, too. I read it in about 2 days.
Yeah.
And I would have sat down and just read until 3, but, yeah, I had to get my kids to school in the morning. So
I have no... impulse control, so it's really, I make terrible decisions with my media consumption. It's just
okay. Shh, you don't have to.
I read this on the plane.
We're all friends here. No, but I think that's so great because you, to me, again, that's what it's about. You haven't read in a long time, and it just takes you back.
Yeah,
like we associate reading with chores and homework, and you know, I was a teacher. I'm guilty for making people read a whole bunch of shit. Oh, can I say shit?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you find something, that you really like to read, it's so such a cool thing because the theater of the mind is happening, and it's you make the story yours, I like you, I really enjoyed it, and
definitely
glad it's here, and of course all the social things too. I mean, so important. And I handed my daughter's Hoppe too, and mm-hmm. It's the first time I've been able to hand her a book that mostly age appropriate. She's a teenager, but that. So this is literally you. This is someone that looks like you and is of your generation. So.
Yeah. I think all around people in this table really enjoyed it. I did find it. So we did have a meetup right before this recording where we had a much wider range of opinions and people. And you know, it was funny that, you know, sometimes... so we can get into characters because I think that was one of the biggest hangups with some people. For me being Asian American, I was already invested in it. But, you know, there were some... one of the big criticisms was that it kind of took a while to get into the character of the narrator, right?
Of Evie,
yeah. Because she starts out very...
Like, she's, like, very much a shrinking violet. She's, like, she doesn't want to be noticed. She just wants to stay in the background. And very much of, not a control freak, but like she needs everything to kind of like go according to plan. And, you know, that makes sense for her job because she has to make sure that like nothing goes wrong right. for her superhero boss, Aveda Jupiter.
Right. Yeah. So the main character, Evie Tanaka, who's also the narrator, is the personal assistant to Aveda Jupiter, her friend Annie Chen, who is the superhero. She's kind of the not really the publicist. She's more of like the
she's like more the body of a woman. Personal assistant. Like think yeah. Devil Wears Prada, like
running errands.
Yeah, running errands,
picking up the laundry,
cleaning up messes.
Like cleaning up her boss's leather yeah. suit,
scheduling events.
And the biggest thing is handling her crises,
her tantrums.
Yeah. Her tantrums.
Yeah, and definitely like social media is a big part of her job. Like she has to tweet and stream all of the fight scenes, which I thought was really like it was really cool and also really weird because we talked about this at the meeting on like what if like Spider-Man like was alive today like in this time like
he is alive.
He is alive but in like the comics he's a photographer by trade and he takes photos of Spider-Man himself so like
and he's the only one who can get footage of Spider-Man because he knows like, where it's gonna be.
If he existed like now, he would just be Snapchatting and Instagramming himself.
But then also everyone else on the streets would have pictures of Spider-Man
That's true.
Yeah, right. Anyone at any of the crises that he averts.
Hashtag Spider-Man. I mean, that's one of the big interesting things about this type of contemporary superhero story. And also something that, you know, maybe the new Spider-Man movie will address. Who knows? But, you know, a lot of the current superhero movies are about putting superheroes out of, like, the golden age into the modern world, right? Like, Superman vs. Batman was all about, you know.
Oh, you watched that movie?
I did. I sat through it. It was terrible, but it was about, you know, like, what if Superman appeared today? And, like, you know, how the government would react, how the public would react. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting way to look at things right now. I did want to go back to what you said about Evie's kind of need for everything to be in control in the beginning. Yeah. And it's interesting because I guess for me, knowing people similar to Evie, where that need for control doesn't come from a place of like she needs to feel in power, but her need for everything to be stable because it comes from her anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it comes from her fear of things going out of control and like getting out of hand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of her story arc is coming to terms with
like things like, she can't control.
Things she can't control.
And it makes sense with her power.
Right.
First spoiler, she has fire powers. You know, her power is dangerous. It's very dependent on her emotions. So she needs everything to be stable. And I think that's why a lot of the people at the meetup today, they said it was really hard to relate to her, to like her in the beginning because, like, she's just kind of, for lack of a better word, boring.
And she kind of seems like she lets, Evita walk all over her. Like, yeah. I know it's because Evita's also her boss, but, you know, some of the stuff, it's a little bit like, you feel like you want her to stand up for herself.
But she's not.
But she's not.
Yeah.
But it's the beginning of a character arc, though.
Yeah,
right. Because she eventually does.
Yeah,
like you're not. But in the beginning, like I can see why people had a hard time, maybe.
Yeah.
Either like not connecting with her or like being frustrated with her because it is kind of frustrating to see that. Like,
right.
This is supposed to be your friend, but she's like walking all over you and kind of making your life. Like,
I think like in the first chapter or the second chapter, she mentions like, oh, like there was a reporter that interviewed me and said, oh, wow, you must have the worst job in the world. And her response to it was, yeah, but I'm the best at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I don't agree necessarily that she's a flat character. It's just she's just someone that you guys don't like at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she's frustrating.
Yeah. It's frustrating to see. And we all, I think, feel that the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Like, I don't know. Did anybody look at like Superman and say, I wish he wasn't such a nerd by day. Why is Clark Kent so lame? It's just the lore. Yeah. It's just the way the characters develop. You know, why is Batman so like sour, which is such a sourpuss? You know, like he's so dark. Gosh, why can't he smile once in a while? Like I think we want so badly because there's so few books that have us in it. We want it to be us exactly. And right. So we don't just let it just be this character who develops into this thing. We finally got a character and like, ah, she's kind of a pushover. This is disappointing, you know. But like, as the story plays out, she becomes such this larger-than-life person, yeah. and comes into her own. It's this, we talked about it, the hero's journey. She hits all the beats of that. And so where we judge the character should be the whole arc, not just how we first encounter.
And that's super interesting. That's something that we didn't really talk about before, but the whole rep sweats of it all, like the
I'm sure the author had like serious I think rep I've sweats read while writing her this book.
Like she wrote something where she was talking about the rep sweats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like it's kind of sad that this is the only story where you have protagonists like this, where you do have that pressure of who am I speaking for, right? And like I mentioned before, like I know personally know people like Evie and people like Annie, like Evita too, who, you know, are two different like sides of one is someone who is obviously super awesome but not really fulfilling their potential or afraid of their potential, and one is someone who like works real hard and like tries to be perfect.
Right.
So
I guess I should point out Naomi Hirahara has a new series of books about a Hapa main character who's joins the LAPD named Ellie Rush, and there are two books in the series out currently. So Sarah and Naomi are friends.
Awesome.
And so there are two
added to the
series
list.
Of books that have half Japanese, half white characters. We need some Koreans and Chinese and every variation therein. But yeah, hopefully it'll become just part of the
but yeah, I mean the canon. The rep sweats thing though is like it's difficult. It's kind of like, I mean, the broader conversation about how like there hasn't been like a female-led superhero movie, for example. And then it's hard because it's like then it turns into like every female superhero that shows up on screen, you expect them to be everything, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they get one aspect of something like wrong or kind of problematic and everyone blows up over it.
Yeah.
But that's because there's like only one. And like one character can't carry like everyone's expectations,
and
you know?
That's the good thing about this book, you get two.
Yeah. So it's not like, yeah, so you can't be like, oh my gosh, this one person's such a pushover. It's like, well, then you have Evita who's like, you know, a diva. Yeah, the pusher.
Literally
the
boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. This breaks the rule of one in Hollywood. So you can have a hard time making a movie because there's more than one non-white lead.
Well, they kind of have like the Band of Fire thing going too, though. They have, you know, the hero, the backup, and then like the other... No,
the supporting cast.
The supporting cast.
The cleanup crew. Like, literally the cleanup crew.
Yeah, I think like Scarlett Johansson is going to have to play Evita for this, too.
She can play the kung fu trainer. Or the
Lucy.
Physical trainer, yeah.
No, the trainer can be Asian, though. You know, that's true. Mr. Miyagi character.
If we were casting this as white Hollywood, that's how it
works. No, things have changed, though. Like, I'll say this, like, with the rep sweats. And we have TV characters now.
Yeah.
More than one show.
Yeah.
And we still don't have drama in movies. We have some comedy and, of course, our kung fu. But
got Chloe Bennett as a
Asian American superhero. Yeah.
And Mina went on there also. She's kind of like the
talent Tamita.
So speaking of the boss, the pusher, Evita, Annie Chen, right? That was her real name.
Yeah.
Evita Jupiter is the superhero
name.
She's like the savior of San Francisco.
This book takes place in San Francisco, by the way. I think we forgot to mention that.
Yeah, this book takes place in the real world. Cupcakes and all. But the character of Evita Jupiter is also, she's pretty much the second lead in this book, right?
Yeah. She's like almost the antagonist. Like, I mean, a lot of conflicts are created because of her actions. Obviously, Evita is like the boss, and she's very pushy, very diva-like, and midway, she Evie kind of takes the spotlight from her.
She steals.
That's exactly what happens. And
although it's still as Evita, it's just not.
She takes the place of her. It's like there's magic in this book too. Yeah. There's a dude with magic powers who can make you look different.
We'll get back to him later. I have some qualms about him. But like, I don't know, I didn't think Evita was like a super bitch or anything. Like, I thought like she had like she had motivation, like she had reasons for her actions. Like right. It was like very understandable, like why she acted the way that she did. Right.
The tiger parents.
Yeah. Like she had tiger parents and she is like, she's a perfectionist. She has like mastered the 10,000 hours of like work. Like she has a very strong work ethic.
Right. Cause the big, not twist, but the reveal, I guess, is that her powers isn't her powers.
Yeah, right? her being a superhero has nothing to do with her powers. Like her powers, her power is very, very, very weak telekinesis. Like she can barely move things with her mind, which is Alice mentioned at the meeting that like it was really interesting because you know she has like such a strong mental state of like I'm going to get this done. I'm going to do this. But like her power,
like
that
it's funny,
relies on mental power.
Yeah, like it's funny that her actual supernatural power like doesn't manifest the way that like she actually is, which is that if she puts her mind to something, she can make it happen. Like she literally made herself into a superhero despite essentially not having powers.
Yeah,
you know. But
yeah, she pretty much made herself Batman.
Like, yeah,
she's just like, I'm going to work out. I'm going to like
without
have,
all
like,
the gadgets.
Yeah, without all the gadgets.
Yeah, I'm going to turn myself into a martial arts master so that I can fight.
Yeah,
like demon cupcakes. You know,
but like
she has instead of like Alfred, she has her team of helpers. Like she has her trainer.
Her team.
She has her science dude. She has her personal assistant, and
then a social media person.
Yeah,
I mean, I kind of related to Aveda like pretty well. Like I related to both characters, Evie and Aveda, but like I definitely had tiger parents and I feel like and like there's a passage in the book I wrote it down. It's from chapter 4 and it says that kept her off the doctor train, so she was always searching for something else she could be the absolute best at. Something that would impress her parents and force them to finally accept her as their perfect daughter. And like when I read that, I was like, oh, like, oh, I know how that feels. Like I'm definitely not a doctor. I'm a writer. And, you know, my parents were not happy about that. So like with Aveda being a superhero, it's kind of like she's picking this creative career path and it's not good enough for her parents. So it kind of makes sense that she's like, she demands perfection of herself. And I think that's also a very common trait in Asian American women. Like we do try to strive for this like perfect package. I mean, I'm not saying like all Asian American women do that, but it is like a tendency that I've noticed.
Yeah.
I thought it was really heartbreaking when that reveal happened, when the backstory of her parents, and then you realize, oh, you know, we've been sort of laughing at her and being critical of her through this whole book until you find out she's got fucked up parents who still, even though she's a superhero, they still don't accept her identity and they still don't give her any love and support. And yeah that's heartbreaking. And then to me, like psychologically, it makes sense. You have to suspend your disbelief with the whole superhero thing. But the family dynamic seems to make a lot of sense. Yeah. We
and
kill ourselves to get our parents' approval.
Yeah, and kind of why she like craves attention a little bit, like
from
other people.
It was withheld from her.
Yeah, yeah, where she's like, well, you know, if I can't make them like love me, like I can do the best that I can be, and like and still have other people love me.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the central conflict of the most of the story is actually between Evie and Aveda, right? Like Evie kind of coming to her own. And Aveda kind of coming to terms with that. Because there was a part, I know, Rira, you mentioned where Aveda could very easily become the villain of the story.
Oh, right?
Did anyone think that in the back of your mind, that Aveda was going to turn bad or something because she was so jealous? No.
I kind of felt like...
the only one.
Well, okay, so the big... So there's a third character that that Evie also has conflict with, which is her little sister, who is just like... the worst teen.
She's
worst
a brat,
and best.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's like going through angsty teen years with like, you know, their mother passed away, right? And then their father is like searching for himself in like
his like pretty much their father joined a yoga cult somewhere.
Yeah, right? He's like in the wilderness.
So in addition to dealing with Aveda, she's also trying to raise B and you know, keep her in tabs. And she, you know, as someone who needs everything under control, having a firebrand teen little sister kind of throws that into chaos as well. So one of the big the big climax of the story is the showdown with the big bad. We'll talk about the big bad later. But I always thought that it would have been Evita who kind of like betrays her, you know. But it turns out to be this, I kind of in the back of my head, I always thought you create something that's better than you, and you become jealous and you become the enemy. It's kind of like a trope in a lot of
It's part even hero's journey thing is to be betrayed by someone close to you.
I think in the back of my mind, I was just like I thought like, oh, that's not going to happen. Like Evita's not going to become the villain. But like I think in the a part of my brain was just like, oh, but it's a possibility,
right?
Like, and I was like, please don't let that happen.
Or at least she would throw a wrench in everything.
Yeah. It's just like I don't want to see like these two great female characters be pitted against each other. Like, I wanted like a story where like the friendship, while it's like complex, like it is like strong and like it comes through, and it did, and I was really happy about that.
Yeah, lucky for you, it did.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here.
Yeah, because the setup is so much that like, I mean, it's not obvious when you first start reading it, or like if you read the blurb, but like as you're reading it, you're like, oh, there's like a big emphasis on like this friendship that they have, even though, you know, both of them are like different people and kind of cause problems for each other. But like, yeah, so, and because of that, I was like, oh, it would really suck if ultimately like she has to like defeat Evita or something, you know? Because then it's like, oh, well, like I get it if this was going to be shown
for,
as like
max drama, right?
If it was just like going for drama points, or if this was going to be like a story about like a truly toxic relationship where like you're like, oh wait, actually you should get away from Evita because she's like really, really terrible for all aspects of your life, then I guess like I could see her becoming the villain. But because the story wasn't that, like I was like, oh, it would really suck if she became the villain.
That's true, because, you know, there's a lot of backstory of why they're friends, how they became friends, and like how this is like, this was their relationship as children. And then when, you know, Evie had her very traumatic experience in grad school, like Evita was the one who like offered her shelter, right? Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, let's talk about how they became friends, because I thought that was really funny. So they became friends like in like grade school, I think kindergarten or like first grade, sometime in
really
elementary
young.
School. And they have like, first, Evita has a lunchbox moment. She brings soup dumplings for lunch, and I think that's like the most delicious lunch you could ever have. But her white classmates are not very supportive of her lunch choice, and she gets made fun of. But you know, Evie, the only other Asian in her class, like she doesn't do anything about it. Right. But then the next day, Evie comes to school with spam musubi, also delicious.
Yes,
and she gets made fun of, and Evita's just eats all of them. I mean, like eats all of the spam musubi that like Evie had brought for her classmates, and that's how they bond. They just bond because like,
and she saves her by taking the attention.
Yeah, by taking the attention. Yeah,
I like how it shows she's a little crazy too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like she gets like,
like she's always been this
she
way.
Yeah, she doesn't just
she's
like,
she's noble and a little crazy.
She does it. She's noble, but she also like turns into like 11.
I think you need that trait to be a superhero.
No, exactly. It's a perfect setup.
I want to know what parents are packing soup dumplings for their kids, because like I have Chinese parents and I never got soup dumplings.
Same.
Right.
Seems like an unwieldy.
Seems
lunch.
Like a lot of work to put into like a school lunch.
I don't know. Have you seen lunches these days? Kids these days with their lunches.
I also feel like, you know, soup dumplings are probably one of the least offensive of the so-called weird like Asian foods that someone could bring to school.
I just like laugh.
But I do love the whole concept.
I just like laugh so hard. Like it was like later in the books where like one of the side characters like says like, oh, like I want to take Evita to this like authentic soup dumpling place, and like Evie's just like her commentary is just like, oh, it's just like weird that all the exotic food that we ate as children got made fun of is now like the cool,
like
the
super hipster popular fare.
And it's like San Francisco, so it's like even funnier.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was just a sick burn for all of San Francisco. Like, should we talk about?
Should probably talk more about their relationship, though, right? Like,
yeah. And before we get that, you said the main conflict was between Evita and Evie, but I would argue also, I have to play English professor here.
Yeah.
The is with Evie and herself equally important conflict. Yes. She's wrestling with her identity. This person she's carved out and the person that she's kind of
she does
down.
Talk to herself. She has a character for herself, right? Like the inner voice.
Right.
Yeah.
With the fire.
Yeah. And it is interesting how her personality does go through a shift as she becomes more and more like because she's being pushed to be Evita. She's also becoming more herself because she's letting
good
loose.
Point.
Yeah, right.
And then that enables her to stand up to Evita and enables her to access these parts of her personality that she had been pushing down for her adult life.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and it like I think I mentioned it earlier, but it like makes sense with her power, her fire power, which relies on her emotions and
right.
Yeah.
Well, fire can nurture, but fire can also burn.
Oh, okay. But as the book goes on, as the book goes on, like in the beginning, her fire powers are unstable, dangerous. Right. But like as she like is able to kind of embrace her emotions and kind of like stop the self-loathing from like sitting in, like her firepower becomes like more powerful, but also like easier to control. And she kind of like grows into herself.
Yeah, like the more control she has over like who she is, the more control she has over her powers.
I guess that's kind of like maybe I'm just like I just had a brainstorm. Maybe it's like this acceptance of yourself, right?
Yeah.
Acceptance of your power, which is kind of a very Asian American identity type of trope as well.
You
right?
sound so like uneasy going into the topic.
I mean not to draw like so much, but also I mean it's definitely, you can tell in the beginning of the book, also as she struggles with her power, that she doesn't want it, right? It's something that she wants to erase. And she even wants to, like, when the opportunity presents itself, she's like, yeah, let's get rid of it. Because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole reason why she, like, agrees to become Evita for, like, while, like, Evita's, like, healing her leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, reminded me of 42nd Street. Like, I don't know if you guys have.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that the John Cho lawyer movie?
I mean, the musical.
No, the musical.
Oh.
No, I haven't seen that.
What am I thinking of?
It's kind of old. I'm surprised you've seen it.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty old. But yeah, it's like the same like situation where like the main lead, like, you know, breaks her leg and
someone has
to take over.
Wasn't that also Showgirls? Wasn't that a Showgirls?
Yeah. It's like it's a lot of other shows.
Yeah, it's one of the plots, yeah.
Wasn't that also like Dave?
Yeah, no, it's me. We can keep thinking of all these. You Gotta Be Me, and then that opens up this whole thing.
We should probably talk about, we've been just kind of hinting at it, the villains, the antagonists.
Right.
The actual non-Evita antagonists.
So the author kind of did a switch on us, right? Because you thought one person was going to be a villain, which is the gossip columnist, who is, you know, the modern day J. Jonah Jameson of Spider-Man, the one who wants to take him down, right? Like, and then it turns out to be her
minion,
fame grubbing, like fame. What's the term for someone who's just like a Klingon? Not Klingon, but clinger onger of like famous people, like
leech,
a groupie.
No, this is like the classic Harry Potter. It's Professor Quirrell this whole time. We thought it was Snape.
Yeah. It turns out to be the owner of the
lingerie store with a very classy name.
Yes,
Pussy Queen.
She turns out to be a demon, the source of all the supernatural goings on in San Francisco, and it also turns out that.
She's not very good at it.
Yeah, the reason all that stuff happens is because she sucks at being a demon.
To me, this was like less about a classic bad guy, and this is part of the comedy and the universe that she's set up. To me, the book's more about the relationship of herself and her friends. Mm-hmm. And then this is just a funny, awesome setup that I don't know if you could take it too seriously because, you know, she's just bad at what she's this demon queen who's kind of fucked up the whole entry of into this world and then is recruited the worst possible people and they don't even like her. I love that. Like they're all like rolling their eyes at everything she says. Yeah. One of the
members at the meetup today mentioned that reminded him of Invader Zim where like there's just you need to like take over a planet, but you're kind of really bad
comic element of the story, which is
just go here. This place is called Earth. Just, Yeah, like take over San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that. I think that was like the incompetent villain thing, I think, was like a fun way to like subvert that trope, because right, it's like, exactly, of course there's like an other world with demon people who want to come over and take over, and like, you know, if it was really serious, we'd all be rolling our eyes and being like, oh, this again, of course.
Yeah.
But it's like funny, like it by making it a funny thing, it was like, it felt refreshing, because you're like, oh, she's just not very good at being evil.
There's some danger,
you know, yeah, like she's still scary real power there. Yeah. But yeah,
there was still a threat, but the threat was more like from like the hero side of like,
yeah, like her loved ones are like kidnapped, and it's just like, oh, okay, well, of course the stakes are upped a little bit.
But it's kind of funny, I think maybe it's also a commentary on like, this is what happens when you create a group without those bonds, right? Because she was trying to create her own like posse of like supporters, but like they all hate each other.
If she had just gotten a hug earlier on, she wouldn't have been so bad.
I mean, she recruited like these local celebrities that aren't really all that famous.
Right.
Yeah. The like, one movie star, I guess.
Yeah. And it's just like, wow, like your plan is really bad. And it's like you came to San Francisco and you're like, oh, I want to be popular. Oh, like I guess these are the cool people, and I'm just going to like brain, like I'm going to make them into zombies. And
and then I'll be cool.
And then I'll be cool, and people will accept me. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
There's so many layers to it, because, you know, on the blog, she always got like that last little paragraph, and it's just
that was my favorite meek, part. Timid, yeah, little,
oh, and I have this to say too, and it's such a sad. You almost feel bad for the.
Yeah. Right.
I think you do feel bad for her as this character, even when you find out she's behind it all. It's like, aw.
Yeah. Because even when her minions are officially minionized,
they're
still giving her like tons of shit. Like,
they're
an
still
idiot.
Sassing her.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like also, criticizing all her moves.
Yeah,
she's like,
yeah, doing that's not going to work.
Confrontation with like with Evie.
They're like, why are you doing this?
Yeah,
someone brought it up at the book meeting too. That like, it's an interesting. Speaking of that, like creating your own superhero or super villain groups. That like, it's an interesting parallel, because the main villain and one of her main minions, like to the public. At first, it's like the main minion, Maisie, she's this gossip blogger. She's the star. You know, she's the famous one. And then, like, we find out later that her like, hanger-on friend is actually the main bad guy. But, like, it's an interesting parallel, because it's kind of like Evie and Aveda. Because, you know, Aveda is this larger-than-life, like, diva character. She gets the spotlight. And, like, you know, Evie's, like, sort of this person off in the background that's always tagging along because trying to clean up her messes or whatever.
That's the actual power, too.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And she has the actual power. So it's interesting to see the parallel between their two relationships, because, you know, Maisie and Shasta don't really have a real relationship other than, like, you know, kiss up and, like, famous person or, like,
using each other.
Evil person and minion. Yeah. But, like, Aveda and Evie have this, like, real friendship. So it's interesting to see, like, you think, like, one relationship might be toxic, but then you look at one that's actually toxic.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I get it. Like, this one's just, it's a little bit toxic, but it's complex.
Yeah,
and it can be fixed. But the other one's just bad.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other character, the other supporting characters. Okay. And well, Scott's gotta take
gotta
off.
Pick up children.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us.
Dad.
Come back next time. We'll schedule this a little more time. But
yeah, cool. Glad to be
thanks
here.
Thanks for your
good
your,
job.
Yeah, Scott. Welcome on everybody. I guess we can tag someone in if you want.
Yeah.
Dan, you want to jump in?
Sure.
All right. Scott's out, but we're tagging in Dan Rickmers.
Hello.
Part of our he's here to bring the gringo perspective too.
just a down south country boy attitude here.
But he was actually the one from the meetup that brought up the Invader Zim metaphor, which was interesting.
Yeah, any Nickelodeon references you need me to bring to this?
Awesome.
I was also responsible for 42nd Street as
well. Yeah, you were. You mentioned it, and I was like, oh yeah, you're right.
Let's talk a little bit about the other supporting characters.
Oh, let's talk. First off, like we were talking about Shasta, the main villain, who was the demon queen, who was incompetent at everything. Turns out, plot twist, she's the mom of the romantic interest, Nate. I was a little bit weirded out by that, because I thought she was much younger from like,
yes,
yeah, and I think she is younger. She just,
it was like a body mock or
well, I don't think Nate was born though. Like he was like spawned. Like he was.
No, she was born. She got pregnant.
Yeah, she said really? She was pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh, I read it to mean like she like, because he was part of like her one of the spells, right? Or maybe it's been a while since I've actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't go into too much detail on the birthing process.
Okay. But,
perhaps
yeah.
that's for the sequel. They
there
can,
was
like,
a
you
stork
know, really
involved.
I mean, demons, right?
Yeah.
Who,
but
who
I think,
knows how their biology really
yeah,
works?
Yeah. But I think she. I think as Shasta, she's like a young body.
Yeah.
But he, because I think he mentions like, oh, last time I saw her, she was an
old crone. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why he's like, oh, that's why I didn't recognize her.
Oh.
Yeah.
So. But like, that was like, I was a little bit weirded out by that because it was like, it just seemed like there wasn't a setup for that.
Yeah.
So I was like, whoa, left field. Okay. But.
Well, I mean, he kind of knew. So Nate is the science person from
the
from Vedas team Jupiter.
Yeah.
And he always knew he had something to hide, though, right? He was kind of cryptic and mysterious and like...
We also mentioned this at the book club meeting. I'm going to keep mentioning the book club meeting. You should come. we mentioned how, like, Nate was, like, the angel in the Buffy series for the TV folks out there. Yeah, like, he's, like, mysterious and you know that he has something to hide. And, oh, look, he happens to be a demon.
But he also was like a giant nerd in the beginning, right? He was like the egghead of the team, right?
Yeah, but so is David Boreanaz, you know? He's a big nerd.
Yeah, like he is the nerd of the group. He's the brains. Like, he does the research. He, like, he collects all the evidence from, like, the fight scenes. But, like, he wasn't really described as the typical laboratory... like a typical scientist, you know, like I expected him to be like the lean type. Like he had in the book, he's described to have like biceps and muscles, and he just happens
really
to have, yeah, he just happens to be like in an alpha male body, but like he's like also like really smart. And I'm like, no, like you need to go one way or the other. He's either like this really hot, like really hot buff alpha guy, or he's like still a hot, but like.
Maybe like, maybe he's like reversed. She's all that. Where like he takes off his glasses or something. Like he's
put those back on.
Put those back on. No,
I think he's like a scientist in the way that a hot cop is a real cop.
Right.
Well, this is like he is the romantic interest. So I understand. Like you have to make him hot.
Yeah.
I really hate that word.
Wasn't he also like portrayed as like a goth dude or something? Like he like wore
no,
black.
No, he's just all black.
Black.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think he was like goth, just that he wore black. But so Sarah Kuhn was at the meetup earlier, and she kind of talked about that, which like makes more sense after she said it, because it was all that like, why is he like an alpha male body, and he's like, but he's a scientist guy. But and she said that she was writing it as like sort of as like to subvert that whole alpha male thing in urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting, because I was like, oh yeah, he totally is like. By his description, based on those books, I'm like, yeah, he totally has like an alpha male body and like that whole like, oh, keeping a secret. Yeah. And then you find out he's a demon.
And like people are totally okay with it.
They're
like, oh, okay.
So
well, sure.
I get that. So I'm like, oh, I see why she did that.
But the thing is, like, I also mentioned this earlier, like him being a demon. Like, his demon powers are useless.
Yeah.
Like, are borderline useless. It's just being super observant. And I'm like, and I'm just like, how is that different from, like, just being a scientist? You have to, like, notice things. You have to.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Well, wasn't this all power also knowing how things work? Like.
I guess. Like
his demon power is to watch how it's made a lot.
You know who else had that power? Siler from Heroes. And he became a serial killer. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Oh, well, this book is the start of a trilogy, so.
Yeah, so maybe we'll get into that.
But what did you guys, I'm sorry. so when I first saw the book and the cover, I thought it was a young adult book. And it turns out that there were sex scenes in it, and I'm okay with that. I read erotica, like, I'm no shame, but, yeah, I, like, got to the first sex scene, and I was like, whoa, hold on.
So this is the first book I've read in a long time, and, like, I've never had exposure to the romance genre of fiction or adult fiction, So it was definitely like, I did also buy the bill of goods that this was a young adult story.
The cover tricked us.
Never, but then we got to that part. I was like, cover. Oh. Like, these go are very on. Descriptive.
I mean, to be fair, it's really not that explicit. It just was a surprise.
It was very surprising, yeah, because it does look like it would be a young adult.
Yeah, I think it's explicit if you think it's for like young teens.
Yeah.
But then if you're like, no, this is actually for adults, it just has kind of a fun cover. Yeah. Then you're like, oh, okay, all right, it's fine. Yeah.
And it makes sense too, like if you think about the age of the heroines, because they're all in their early like 20s, you know. So it's like, so you're kind of like, okay, like I can see that this is not young adult. Like necessarily in the category, but yeah, I thought it was like more young adult skewing too, and then when I got there, I was like, oh, this is not what I thought it was.
But like, what did you guys think of the romantic relationship between Nate and Evie? Because they kind of start off on like obviously like the wrong foot. It's a romance,
thing.
Yeah. Like, of course you have to start off on the wrong foot.
I wasn't surprised because of how much they were fighting. I was like, they're fighting so much. They must.
I also didn't understand why they were fighting so much.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, are you just fighting each other because you're sexually attracted to each other, and that's why you're just constantly fighting?
Seemed to be.
Well, I mean, that's why he was fighting with her. But I think part of her awakening was kind of discovering that wait, this guy is hot, right?
Yeah.
Because like she hadn't noticed it before. That was.
I got the impression she was lying to herself. Yeah. Like where she was like. Like the internal monologue that she kept having, like where she was like, nope, I have this robot voice where I don't like it. Like where you're like, you don't even really believe that. Like,
yeah. I mean, definitely. She started describing him as like his shoulders or something more like descriptively. And then her inner monologue was like, wait, I don't think that. Right. Wasn't there a part like that?
Yeah, there was a part like that. But speaking of like broad shoulders, I highlighted it apart and like
mark for later.
Yeah, it was. I was like obviously surprised by the sex scenes, but it wasn't like anything that I hadn't seen before. Why is it not loading? Okay, but like the sex scenes, like instead of it being like really sexy, I just thought they were really silly and kind of, like there was some cheese in those scenes. And one of the scenes that one of the lines that like made me laugh out loud for quite a long time was he was so big, those broad shoulders, that gorgeous chest, I couldn't help but wonder if he was proportional. And just like there's like a lot of those scenes in like the really intimate scenes. And
is that how girls think?
No. But there was like another scene where like it was like the ice cream scene where like they're in Nate's lab in the basement, and like Nate is like putting ice cream on Evie and like kind of like cleaning it up with his mouth, but but like Evie's inner monologue is just like, she keeps saying science is awesome.
Right.
Science is awesome.
Well, because like probably in high school, like she had to like make ice cream in chemistry class. And she just loved that experience. You know, sense memory.
But like as much as I like, laughed and like cringed during those scenes, I thought they were like really fun.
Yeah. And I feel like it fits her character. It really does, she's kind of like dorky about that stuff. So I feel like, or like, I don't know. It's like fits her like voice, I think. That she's kind of like.
I know you had more. Silly. I know you had more issues with the character of
Scott.
Scott.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I had issues with both, with all of the male characters, simply because like I was so into the Aveda Evie relationship. I was like, why are men in this book?
Right. Like, they're just tacked on, right?
Yeah. Just like, oh, like the romantic relationship's okay, like.
Right.
It's fine, but like that's not the main part of the story. So like I was just kind of a little bit like, oh, like I can just kind of brush this off. Scott, aka the magic dude, the guy who like does all of the necessary magic for Evie to turn into Aveda while Aveda is injured. I had issues with him. He just kept showing up, and I was like, why are you showing up? Like you're not a love interest. I thought he was going to be a villain because he kept showing up and he was like being so nice, but it seemed like he had unrequited feelings for Evie, the protagonist. And I was like, okay, well, like, something's got to give. Like he has to, there has to be some kind of secret, but there was no secret.
Yeah, like, there's this whole backstory here where it's like, oh, yeah, like, we had sex once, you know, at prom, and then now we're just totally cool, right? Right?
I was expecting that to, like, be pulled out later. And it was...
I mean, he was also, like, Evita's high school crush, right?
Yeah, and, like, you know, in a fight scene, like, Evita kind of pulls out that card saying, like, oh, you had sex with, like, the guy that I like.
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, I don't really care about Scott, so it's not really that much of a big deal.
Also, it was bad, apparently, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought he... I don't think I didn't have, like, deeper suspicions about him, other than I thought he was going to be, like, the other half of the love triangle, which I'm glad didn't happen because, you know, like, I'm not really interested in that. Because, like Rira said, the most interesting relationship is between Aveda and Evie. So, you know, love triangle would just make that, just take more attention away from that. Yeah. And, yeah, Scott's, like, he's a really, really minor character in this book. So he's like kind of a non-character, so it would suck if I had to spend like more time reading about him and Evie instead of like Evie and Aveda.
I guess the last like kind of plot relationship we hadn't talked about is the one between Evie and her sister, which becomes kind of the most important one for the climax
because
it kind of saves the day.
We talked about Beatrice, I think that's her name. Like, she is a complete brat. She is like, she's a teenager and she causes a lot of problems. She like drinks and like goes out to like public events that her sister's working at and like causes a lot of embarrassment. But, you know, it's like, you have to like kind of understand that because of all the family circumstances that's kind of happened. She is that way, and it makes sense that she is that way. It turns out that she has a superpower, and her power is like
reverse empathy.
I think she projects her
feelings out into the world and makes other people feel it. Is that what it was?
I think so. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But there's like in the final showdown, like Evie has to get her sister to be angry in order to close the portal and like suck the villain back into where she came from. And one of the members at book club, she mentioned like, oh, I think it was Lily actually. She said like, oh, I really like that because it validated like a woman's anger. Like it was okay to be angry, and like I didn't really think about that before because. Especially in Asian American culture, it's not okay for girls to get angry. It's kind of considered to be like disobedient and the opposite of demure.
And especially not angry in like a showy way.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, if you're angry but you like do what Evie did and like tamp it down, or like, you know, or even like in an Evita way where you're just cold to people, then it's like I almost feel like, not that it's like more acceptable, but kind of like I feel like I've seen that more. But to be like explosively like showy,
like Dragon
anger,
Ball Z anger,
yeah, just like shouting at people, yeah, like I feel like that's definitely more like taboo, I guess. Yeah. So that was interesting. I did think she was so bratty, though. Like,
yeah,
really disliked her. I felt like she, I mean, after all the background and stuff, I understand like where she's coming from and like that she's acting out. But she did read kind of young to me because she's supposed to be like 17.
Yeah, but she sounded 14.
I think that's like one of the things that like threw me off a little bit in terms of her brattiness.
Yeah, where I kind of like, saw her more like as more of an obstacle than like a character for.
Well, yeah, like right? She sets the she pretty much sets the stage for Evie to become Aveda's like doppelganger.
Yeah,
because what happens like they go to like this. Gala and like demons take over that so this is how the demons work. Like demons go through the portals and they take the form of whatever's there,
right?
So there were a lot of Aveda statues in that event, and pretty much like Evie, like who is dressed as Aveda because Aveda's injured, she uses her fire power, which Aveda does not have, and that's how everybody finds out. And like the reason why she uses her fire power is because her sister is drunk at the event, and kind of just shows up.
And she thinks she's in danger when those demons show up.
So like, her sister is a problem child, literally a problem child.
Yeah.
But she's also like the most important thing to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wish she was not as annoying.
Yeah. Or like more fleshed out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I feel like it was like, you know, that was like the main note with her was like to be a tempestuous, like angry
also,
teenager.
Young Twitter person.
Right. Young Twitter person.
She takes over the social media job.
Yeah.
And she does a way better job.
Well, yeah, because she's like in that generation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I mean, I think it's interesting that the siblings, their powers are like tied to emotions, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you have to like be careful of like how you feel or just not care and just let it loose. But I did want to mention the movie that was constantly referenced in this book, The Heroic Trio, which came out in 1992. It's a Hong Kong film that stars Michelle Yeoh, Anima Mui, and Maggie Cheung. And they star as an all, like pretty much Charlie's Angels, but the Asian superhero version of that. And even Aveda, they kind of worship this movie. They constantly reference it. And it was actually a turning point for Aveda to become a superhero. They see the movie at a theater. And I have the quote down here. Evie says, "We knew we were witnessing something big enough to knock our world off its axis. Superheroes who looked like us." And I just kind of wanted to like ask you guys, like there's not that many Asian American or even Asian superheroes in media. So I don't know, like reading this book, like was it kind of like a fresh take on it or... Sorry, I'm not forming my questions correctly.
I mean, it was definitely one of the reasons why I picked up the book was because of, you know, the representation, right? And that's been a big deal, especially for us in media this past, like, even 2 years.
Yeah.
And more, honestly, for those of us following it and been reporting on it. So just to have this book exist, I was ready to, like, read through it,
mm-hmm.
whether I liked it or not, just because I wanted to consume it. Right. And like, luckily, I liked it a lot. But definitely, like, it's we said this in the beginning, right, about the rep sweats. It's kind of sad that because this is all that exists, and in addition to like a few other examples, that we kind of map all of our expectations onto it. But at the same time, like, the fact that it exists is like, I don't know, maybe it's a sign of progress.
I think it like definitely. Like, I know the Emmys happened, like, not that long ago, and mm-hmm. everybody kept talking about, like, Alan Yang's speech mm-hmm. on, like, it's like, oh, like, parents give your children cameras, and, like, so there can be more of us. And I think, I thought it was actually pretty sad that, like, Aveda and Evie had to look all the way back to a 1992 film to, like, find role models. And it was just like, oh, that's right, there aren't that many... I wonder how the young folks who read this book will react to it. Will they have that same reaction? It's like, oh, like there's a superhero and she looks like me.
Right.
And like, I can become that. Well, you can't really become superheroes in real life, but like,
we're all superheroes.
Unless you're an actor and then you decide to be a superhero in a movie. But, yeah, like I thought that was pretty unique. I mean, you don't really see that. In books, they don't really talk about
like the thing, like specific media or like representative media.
I thought it was fake.
No, me too. Yeah,
it's just like, oh, there's no way that like this can be an actual movie. I IMDb'd it, and I was like, oh, it's an actual movie.
Yeah,
I mean, it's true though. Like for a lot of us growing up, the only time we ever saw Asians in leading roles or as heroes was in Asian media, like Chinese films, Korean films, Japanese films. You know, so it's culturally accurate too, because they didn't have this book for themselves, right?
Mm-hmm,
the characters,
yeah.
So they had Asian media.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap it up with some final thoughts. Any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. Like I said, I cringed, I laughed, I had issues with the guys in this book. I was reading this on the plane, so I had to be quiet. I'm a very emotional reader. if a little something pisses me off, I'll just kind of chuck the book and just go, ah! but I couldn't do that on the plane. But I think that's a sign that I actually enjoyed it, and it was a fun experience. It was definitely a genre fiction. It was a genre book. It's not good. If you're looking for something serious, this isn't it. This is not it.
Yeah.
But with that, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I would generally would recommend it, but it is a very genre book. So, if you're not into superheroes or any of that, you might want to think about it.
Yeah, think about it.
I wouldn't say don't pick it up. Because I think it's it has interesting characters, and again, it's great that there's two Asian American leads plus a lot of women in the book, so it's you get different facets of female characters, but it is very heavy on you'll enjoy it more if you like superhero stuff or genre stuff
and comedy. If you don't like humor,
it's a funny book, so it's not it's not there to make you think about your life in a very deep way unless you want it to.
Yeah, it's very much in the vein of a lot of comedy superhero movies that have been coming out, where it has all this lore and world that is there, but it's not there for you to kind of poke and prod at it because it doesn't hold up, It's
right. You're just supposed to accept it and enjoy it. Suspend your disbelief and try to go with the story.
Yeah, the great things that are in the book are off to the side of those other stories,
right?
Where it's it's about the relationship between these two friends. You would go to something your more standard Hollywood fare, which is Captain America and stuff, and it's like do you really care about his relationship with Iron Man? Not really. You're just there to watch people punch each other,
but they're friends. So definitely if you enjoy this type of comic book or hero type stories, you'll definitely find a lot of things here that you can relate to. If you enjoy YA type stories in general, I think there's a lot to relate to as well. I am a little for me, when I get into a world, I do want to start digging into the lore.
I'm kind of
super excited that there's going to be more books coming out from Sarah soon from this world, so maybe who knows? We might learn more about the demon world. But I definitely echo everyone. My final thoughts are that I liked it a lot. It was a great read. It was definitely a refreshing, just characters in general. I would recommend it to everyone, but I would also recommend it with the caveat. I would know, some of my friends just have no patience for demons and fantastical things,
right? Yeah, that's what I mean. There are people I know who just aren't into genre things, and that's fine, but it'd be harder for them to enjoy this book.
I'll tell them it's good and I'll explain what it is, and they'll roll their eyes.
But you'll make them read them. And I mean, the reason why I wanted to make this book club was because there are so many different genres that Asian American writers and Asian authors dabble in, some books have Asian American protagonists, some don't, some write fantasy, some write memoirs. There's a lot of diversity in this sub-genre of it's just we don't all write the Joy Luck Club,
it's the same with any media, right? Film, it's not all about us finding our identity or coming to terms with it.
Yeah, or being martial artists.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, there was some martial arts in this book.
Yeah.
That wasn't the center of it.
And we said, there's two of them, and not both of them aren't martial artists, Yeah. I mean, Evie kind of has to learn a little, but, like ultimately they're not just
that comes with the territory.
You don't need a punch and kick if you're just going to burn stuff.
Yeah, if you're going to burn exactly. Things, yeah,
but
yeah, it's like learn your class. Come on,
fire beats fists and
fire beats grass.
Yeah,
that's what you mean, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're probably going to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So, yeah, that was episode one of Books and Boba. This was Rira, myself, Marvin, Alice, Dan, and also Scott Okamoto earlier talking about Sarah Kuhn's Heroin Complex, available now at bookstores and online. I guess what's next with the book club?
We have a couple books in consideration, but I think it would be very selfish if I just picked the book. So what we're probably going to do is on our Facebook page, if you haven't liked our Facebook page, do so now. We're going to have a poll up. We're going to have a poll with three books. And by the end of the month, I guess, before October, we'll pick the most liked book. And that will be the pick of the month.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this when it comes out, then you can help us choose the next book. If not, just check out our Facebook page. It's Books and Boba. You can also find us at Goodreads. And also you can find the podcast at booksandboba.com. Please like, subscribe. And if you do listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a rating and review. If enough people do that, then we can get on the new and noteworthy list maybe. So we'll see. Let's see if we get there.
Keep reading.
Yeah, so that'll do it. Oh, wait. Okay.
Wait.
We also do live meetups. So right before this recording, we did have a live meetup to talk about Heroin Complex with a wider array of people. So if you'd like to join our book club, and if you're in the LA area, please come to our next live meetup where we can talk in person and get more perspectives on the next book that we read. And if you can't join us, that's what this podcast is for. So thanks for listening. This has been Books and Boba. We'll be back next month with hopefully some more boba. And books. Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was produced and edited by Marvin Yue. Special thanks again to our guests, Alice Fan Chang, Scott Okamoto, and Dan Rickmers. You can learn more about Books and Boba and our upcoming live meetups on our Facebook page. And be sure to join our Goodreads group to stay updated. Books and Boba is a part of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of podcasts and podcasters featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian American community. Learn more about the collective as well as check out other podcasts by Asian Americans by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. And thanks again for listening to Books and Boba. We'll see you next time.